This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us.
Every year, more than 90,000 Nigerians visit holy sites in the Middle East. Nigerian authorities this week said they are concerned about the escalation of violence there.
That was reported by Timothy Obiezu about concerns in Nigeria over the conflict in the Middle East. Details coming up. And a new artificial intelligence tool helps Kenyans understand the law. And South Africa's Springboks aim for a record fourth Rugby World Cup. All these and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. As Israeli heavy bombardment of Gaza continues, more humanitarian aid is entering Gaza through the Rafah crossing from Egypt after a two-week blockade. VOA's Paul Ndiho has more.
Israel on Monday says it has launched more than 300 strikes on the Gaza Strip over the last 24 hours. The Hamas-run Ministry of Health says that at least 5,000 Palestinians have been killed and over 15,000 wounded. In the occupied West Bank, nearly 100 Palestinians have been killed and over 1,600 wounded in violence and Israeli raids since October 7th. More than 1,400 people in Israel have been killed, mostly civilians who died in the initial Hamas rampage into southern Israel. Additionally, 222 people, including foreigners, are believed to have been captured by Hamas during the incursion and taken into Gaza. According to Israel's military, two of those have now been released. About a dozen trucks are carrying desperately needed aid. The third convoy in 3 days arrived inside Gaza from Egypt on Monday through its Rafah, Gaza's only crossing not controlled by Israel. The trucks were loaded with medical aid, food and water donated by the Egyptian Red Crescent and United Nations organizations, including the World Food Program and UNICEF.
20 trucks were allowed to move across the border, all containing emergency supplies, three of which were WFP trucks, I'm happy to say, containing life-saving food on board. What we plan to do is distribute that, but this cannot be the last convoy. We need to have sustained, safe access to be able to get our trucks across the border so that we can feed the millions of people that are depending on emergency food.
The United States brokered the entry of aid convoys into Gaza, where Israel has cut off most water, food, power, and fuel. Israel had sealed the territory for 2 weeks. Hospitals say they are running low on medicine and fuel for emergency generators amid the conflict. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Israel has intensified attacks on northern Gaza and has warned anyone who stayed risk being considered as an accomplice of Hamas. The Israeli Defense Forces said it had attacked over 320 targets in Gaza in the last 24 hours, including Hamas militants' infrastructure and military equipment. Also, the families of 222 confirmed hostages were notified that their loved ones were being held captive in the Gaza Strip. Gaza authorities today said more than 5,000 people have died in the bombardment, which began after Hamas militants attacked several Israeli communities on October 7th and killed more than 1,400 people. More aid trucks are entering Gaza from Egypt today, but the number remains far below the more than 400 trucks a day that normally crossed into the Palestinian territory. For an update on the situation today, standing by, we have VOA's Linda Grantstein. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Linda.
Thank you so much.
So tell us where you are and what's been happening today around you.
Sure. Well, I'm in Jerusalem, and there is some possibly breaking news, and I want to confirm, I want to make sure that I do not have this confirmed, but there are reports of a deal that Qatar and the United States are trying to broker a deal for the release of 50 hostages who have dual nationality, Americans, Brits, Canadians, etc., and that that's why Israel is holding off on its ground invasion, hoping to get these 50 hostages of the, as you said earlier, 222 out. Now, if that happens, that would, of course, be a very big deal. Two hostages, American citizens who don't actually live in Israel, a mother and daughter, were released over the weekend, but they were the first hostages to have been released. So if this deal goes through, apparently it is Qatar and the United States that is trying to mediate with Hamas.
Linda, here, the Israeli military has launched, limited raids into Gaza to hunt Hamas gunmen and search for hostages taken from southern Israel. But now we know that there are 222 confirmed hostages, and U.S. President Joe Biden reportedly urged Israel to delay ground attacks off the region to secure the release of more hostages. So is that one of the reasons maybe we're seeing some movement here with this 50 hostages you just mentioned with dual nationality?
It's certainly a possibility. I mean, I think that, the Israeli army is growing a little bit frustrated. For 2 weeks, they've been, sitting just outside Gaza, waiting to go in a ground operation. And apparently American pressure has sort of held that off somewhat. At the same time, as you said earlier, Israel continues its bombing raids, especially on northern Gaza. The Palestinian Health Ministry today said that close to 5,000 Palestinians have died in the Israeli bombing raids, including thousands of children.
And talk to us about the aid convoy that has entered Gaza from Egypt over the Rafah border crossing.
So there were two separate convoys, each with 20 trucks of food and water and medicine. There are fears really of a growing humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Even before the war started, 95% of the drinking water in Gaza was not drinkable. So there's a fear of the spread of disease. UN officials say that the aid trucks are a beginning, but don't come close to meeting the need. American officials say that they expect the pace of the aid to increase. Now, all of that aid is coming from the Egyptian border, from the Rafah border. Israel has said it will not let aid go through the northern border of the Strip as long as Hamas continues to hold hostages.
And the death toll, I'm sure it has gone up. Any numbers from the Israeli side as well as the Palestinian side?
Yes. So the Israeli side is 1,400. There are, yesterday a soldier was killed on the border with Gaza. He actually was inside Gaza, apparently looking for the remains of Israelis. There are still hundreds of people who haven't been identified. But the official death total is 1,400 on the Israeli side and close to 5,000 on the Palestinian side.
And Israeli defense minister actually said Israel's attack on Gaza could last a month, two, or three. Talk to us about that.
He was talking about the ground invasion, the defense minister, Yoav Gallant. I mean, a ground invasion of Gaza is going to be extremely complicated and extremely painful for both sides. And that's one of the reasons that Israel is not in such a rush to do it, although probably will in the next, few days, is that, it's Gaza is extremely crowded, densely populated. Hamas is believed to be, the Hamas gunmen are believed to be hiding underneath in tunnels and things like that. And Israel says that Hamas is using civilian infrastructure like hospitals as hiding places. But the Israeli defense minister said that Israel is committed to getting rid of Hamas, that it simply, will not allow Hamas to exist with any kind of military power, which then leaves the question, you know, assuming then Israel has an extended war in Gaza, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, whatever it is, what happens afterwards? And it doesn't seem like people have given a whole lot of thought to what happens after this war ends.
And lastly, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said yesterday that the U.S. expects the Israeli-Hamas war to escalate through involvement by proxies of Iran, and asserted that the Biden administration is prepared to respond if American personnel or armed forces become a target of any such hostilities.
Well, yes. You know, Israel, we've already seen in the past, you know, 10 days an increase in tensions on the border between Israel and Lebanon. Hezbollah, which is a proxy of Iran, it controls South Lebanon. And every day there's been exchanges of fire across that border. Every time that, you know, Israel, an Israeli military post is fired on, Israel fires back with artillery, with tank fire, or at cells it says they're preparing to carry out attacks. Israel has evacuated about 25 communities from that area, fearing that Hezbollah could get involved. So far, it seems as if both Hezbollah and Israel are trying to be careful not to do anything that would drag the other side into a full-scale conflict. Hezbollah has at least 150,000 rockets that can hit all of Israel. So, you know, Hezbollah is a serious fighting force, and Israel doesn't really want to be fighting on two fronts at the same time, although it says it is prepared to do so. Last week, we had the Houthi rebels in Yemen launch two missiles at Eilat, the southern Israeli port city. The U.S. aircraft carrier shot down those missiles. But, you know, tensions are really running high on all kinds of fronts, and there is certainly concern that this war between Israel and Hamas could easily spill over.
VOA's Linda Grandstein updating us with breaking news from Jerusalem. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
Every year, tens of thousands of Christian and Muslim pilgrims from Nigeria visit holy sites in the Middle East, but authorities say the conflict between Israel and Hamas, sparked by a Hamas attack on October 7th, is hindering pilgrimage plans. The conflict has so far killed more than 5,000 people on both sides and sparked street protests, including in Nigeria, as Timothy Obiezu reports.
As Musa Abdullahi prepared for weekly Muslim prayers Friday, there was something else on his mind. He says he's worried about the war between Israel and Hamas, and he's especially concerned about the plight of Palestinian Muslims. Soon after prayers, Abdullahi joined many other Muslims marching in the streets in support of Palestinians and to criticize Israel's heavy bombardments in Gaza.
You see people carrying Palestinian flag, chanting slogans in support of the Palestinian people to say no against injustice, most especially the female and children that have been brutally attacked by the Israeli soldiers.
Anger in Nigeria is growing along with the rising death toll in the Israeli-Hamas war. More than 1,400 Israelis were killed in the unprecedented Hamas attack on southern Israel nearly 2 weeks ago, and more than 4,000 Palestinians have been killed in the Israeli retaliatory attacks since then. Every year, more than 90,000 Nigerians visit holy sites in the Middle East. Nigerian authorities this week said they are concerned about the escalation of violence there. The Nigerian Christian Pilgrims Commission, NCPC, suspended visits to Israel due to the ongoing crisis. On Thursday, the Supreme Council for Sharia in Nigeria held a news conference criticizing the killings, saying they are a violation of human rights. The Supreme Council blamed the United States for voicing support for Israel and called on the United Nations to take a firm stance. The Council also urged Nigerian authorities to review its relations with Israel. Sheikh Abdul Rashid Hadiyatullah is the president of the Supreme Council.
Apart from its criminality and lack of humanity, it also clearly shows the failure of global institutions established after the Second World War to protect human beings, the international community has failed to address the root cause of this conflict.
This week, the U.S. vetoed a U.N. Security Council resolution that called for humanitarian pauses in the conflict to deliver aid to the Gaza Strip. For now, many Nigerian pilgrims are watching and hoping that the fighting ends so that it is safe again for them to travel. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. A widow of a Pakistani journalist who was shot dead by police in Kenya after he fled arrest in his home country filed a lawsuit today over his death. Arshad Sharif was a critique of Pakistan's powerful military establishment and supporter of former Premier Imran Khan. Kenyan police opened fire on his car at a roadblock outside the capital Nairobi a year ago. Javaria Siddiqui, one of Sharif's two wives, told the French news agency AFP in Islamabad last week that she was filing a lawsuit. Her lawyer confirmed it had been lodged at Kenya's High Court today, a year to the day since the late-night killing. Last year, Kenyan officials said it was a case of mistaken identity, and officers believed they were firing on a stolen vehicle involved in an abduction. Siddiqui, however, alleges her husband was killed in a targeted attack. A Kenyan information technology practitioner created Wakili, which means lawyer, an artificial intelligence tool to help Kenyan citizens learn the country's laws and how to seek justice. It is aimed at a wide range of users, including individuals, legal professionals, and organizations in need of assistance with legal issues. Wakili's developer was inspired by how people, including his father, struggle to get justice. Muhammad Yusuf reports.
Just 1 in 10 Kenyans seek justice in a government court, according to a survey by the country's judiciary. Kenyans say their inability to get justice in court is because they cannot afford legal fees for a lawyer, don't understand the legal process and procedures, and face delays in resolving cases. Naftali Obuoni's family encountered similar difficulties when his father was unexpectedly terminated from his job. The IT practitioner developed an artificial intelligence tool called Wakili, meaning lawyer, which is designed to help Kenyans pursue justice by providing information on legal matters and guiding them on how to access the legal system.
Wakili.org is basically a bot, it's a chatbot. This is where you can go if you have any issues. It might even not be directly law-related, but it might be related to things that you face in society, and you want to know what is your course of action and you need guidance. It understands all laws in Kenya, meaning whether it's customary, whether it is civil, criminal, whether it is property, land, all those laws, it already understands them. And it doesn't list you the laws, it interprets for you.
Launched just a week ago, more than 2,800 people have engaged with the Wakili AI tool, seeking guidance on property ownership procedures, gender-based violence case inquiries, and contract drafting for employers. James Mwindi, a software developer, is one of many users benefiting from Wakili. He is using AI tool to draft client agreements, which is more cost-effective than hiring legal services.
This has kind of helped us now formalize all our agreements with our clients so that now before we begin any software development project for a client, we're able to have a draft contract, a draft non-disclosure agreement agreed, and they feel at ease as a client because they know now the process is formal. And on our end, it has also now reduced the costs.
Some lawyers have voiced concern that incorporating AI into the profession, much like in other fields, may lead to a decrease in their income and a reduction in the number of people seeking their services. Geoffrey Nyanga is an advocate of the High Court of Kenya. He is embracing the technology as it makes his work easier.
Research consumes most of lawyers' time because research is based on what cases you're handling and what particular area of the law. This narrows it down. Once you ask that question, it narrows it down. You don't have to start broadly and then narrow down. it narrows it down for you.
The developers aim to incorporate a voice recognition system into the program to make it accessible to millions of Kenyans. The additional system would enable those who don't know English or Swahili to seek legal information in their native languages. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Rugby fans across the world are excited for the Saturday's historic World Cup final that will witness South Africa's Springboks going up against New Zealand's All Blacks to determine who will be crowned champions for a record four times. For more, VOA's Mike Hovey spoke to Valiant Kirtley, the sports editor for Newsroom Africa, a 24-hour media outlet that broadcasts to South, East and West Africa.
It is a final that many neutrals would have wanted to see when it comes to the Rugby World Cup, because the rivalry in this sport doesn't get much greater than the mighty All Blacks up against the Springboks. It's a storied one, and also it's a repeat of the 1995 Rugby World Cup final, where after that year, the sport really took on a new shine. It became professional. We had South Africa back in global sport, and it meant so much for South Africa, for South African sport, as the stories have been told, and the World Rugby themselves are saying it was one of their greatest finals, not only because of maybe the game and the fact that somebody won the Webb Ellis Trophy in South Africa winning it for the first time, but actually for what it did for South Africa and for the South African country.
Now, I want to talk a little more about the controversy that's surrounding the Springboks right now. After the English game, we saw Bongi Mbonambi, the starting hooker. He's now facing allegations of racial slurs. How is that affecting the team morale? What's the team looking like?
So where I'm standing right now is the Salle Jean d'Arc, which is the hall where South Africa has been having their press conferences for the last 2 weeks. For the first time, we're going to be hearing face-to-face from Springbok management about the allegations. They did release a statement yesterday where they said that they are investigating the matter, and they do take the allegations very seriously. If anything is found to substantiate the claim, they are investigating it. World Rugby came out earlier today, their statement reading, they take all the allegations of discriminatory behavior extremely seriously. They can confirm that they're formally reviewing the allegations. In terms of the mood in the camp, just a couple of hours ago, we were at training. Bongi was there, he was present, and he was training as he usually does, and the mood was good. So at the moment, we are waiting to hear what Springbok management actually have to say.
In closing, of course, you mentioned, you're at the training camp, you've seen there. Have you seen any new faces that could hint that they may be preparing, that maybe if Bongi can't play, there will be a replacement?
We know that Malcolm Marks got injured, so he was not part of the Rugby World Cup after the Scotland game, and that's what meant that Bongi Mbonambi was our number one hooker. When they called up Andre Pollard, and they chose not to actually replace a hooker for a hooker and instead call up Andre Pollard, they said, but we do have cover in Dion Ferreira, Marco van Staden, and earlier today, Marco van Staden was practicing his throwing.
That was Vailen Kirtley, the sports editor for Newsroom Africa. She spoke to VOA's Mike Hovey from Paris, France. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Bill Androdi, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.